Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. Join your hosts, Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter, as we create a brave space for conversations about racism, personal transformation, and accountability. Conversation provides a means to dive deeply into your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs, and examine what emerges in your words, actions, and behaviors. The show is a journey towards anti-racism by cultivating change within yourself first and then out into the world. Learn to engage in racial dialogue using four tools: courage, conversation, relationship, and accountability. Discover how truth, reconciliation, and healing can emerge from honest and deliberate conversations. Manifest social change right now on Inflection Point Podcast. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the newest episode of Inflection Point Podcast. I'm your host, Anita Russell, and here's a quick hello from my two co-hosts, Mavis and Gail.
Hi, I'm Mavis Bauman. Hope you're well tonight.
Hi, I'm Gail Hunter, and welcome to Inflection Point Podcast.
So together, the three of us make up the Anti-Racism Mastermind Group, and we're kind of your guides on this journey towards anti-racism. And we've been talking about a specific topic over the course of the last few episodes, and that topic is centered around identity and the power of a movement. So we've been talking about various movements, such as the Great Migration, and prior to that, we talked about emancipation and Reconstruction. Then we moved into the Great Migration and the Harlem Renaissance. So now we're kind of going into the space of the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Nationalist Movement, the Black Panther Party, and we'll touch a little bit on the more contemporary version of all of that with the Global Black Lives Matter movement. So let's just kind of jump right in, because we have lots of stuff that we want to cover and we don't want to belabor the intro too long. So looking at the civil rights movement, the thing that really pops into my mind from a personal perspective, and so that's what we're doing. We're kind of looking at this, what were some of those personal experiences that we had within specific moments in these movements and how that kind of ties into who we are as individual people. And so when I think about the civil rights movement, the Black nationalist movement, certain people obviously come into my mind, right? And it's also centered around those people that come into my mind are assassinations. And so when I look at that time period and I think back on it, the thing that I really remember most prominently, I would say, are the assassinations that that this country kind of lived through. So if we go back to Medgar Evers as an example, Medgar Evers was a civil rights leader. He was assassinated in 1963. Then we had John F. Kennedy, who was also assassinated in 1963. Then we had Malcolm X, who was assassinated in 1965. Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968. Robert Kennedy was also assassinated in 1968. And then in 1969, Fred Hampton, one of the leaders of the Black Panther Party out of Chicago, was also assassinated. And so when I look at myself in relation to all of that, we're talking about my age from about the age of 6 to about the age of 13 or so, where that was like a very dominant space in our reality. And not only that, but I always, so one of the things that we're going to talk about also is what are some of the songs that were connected? So when I think about that time period, the civil rights movement, the Black national movement, not Black nationalist movement, there are certain songs that pop into my mind that are kind of seared into my memory. And whenever I think about these songs, I immediately go back to this time period. So one of the songs is Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come. I think most people my age group who were alive during this time, that is one of the iconic songs that were in this time period. And then I also think about Gil Scott-Heron. A little bit later, in the like late 60s, early 70s, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and things of that nature. So Mavis and Gail, what are some of the things that you think of when you think about that time period and all the assassinations and the protesting? What are some of those personal moments that you can really identify with? And what was a particular song that you might remember?
Gail, you're up.
the strongest memory that I came up with was probably in, I'm trying to think what year it was, 1964. My parents moved my family from a very small, fairly diversified community to a totally white community that was somewhat rural and was getting developed. And now it's extremely developed, but back then it wasn't. And I was at 14 and 19, whatever that was, 1965, I guess, in eighth grade. And I remember the assassinations of JF Kennedy when I lived before, in seventh grade. And then obviously with the civil rights movement that was going on, I had some awareness of it. But when I moved to this white community with a black family, and I may have said this before, but there was a black family that moved into a very expensive neighborhood and somebody burned a cross on their front yard. And that was bad enough. That was a shock to me. But the reality that nobody seemed upset. I mean, nobody really, they thought, well, they couldn't believe somebody had done that, but not to the extent of what I felt. And so at the same time, there was an older boy on my bus, and the school I went to was a junior and senior high school mixed together. It was in the same building. And he played the guitar, and he taught me how to play guitar, and he taught me how to play the song Blowing in the Wind. And at that time, this is going to really date me, we had these hootenannies. This is when folk singing was really getting to know itself and become more stronger as a form of music. And the song always stuck to me. It's certainly the first phrase of it is about the war, right? But the next stanza is about the civil rights movement and how it's, because it says how many seas must the white dove sail before they can sleep in the sand, and how many times that's about the war. But how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? And how many times can a man turn his head? It still gets to me, right? You know, when I read those words, I remember singing. I was terrified singing on stage in front of junior, senior high school kids. But it just is, how many times, right? And I'm white, so I don't have my history, my experience, but my ability to be empathic, I can feel it, right? I can feel it so strongly. So that's my first memory. That's my strongest memory.
Gail, for me pushing you up front. Sorry. I asked you to go before me because I remember the assassinations, but as any of our listeners know, or anybody who knows me, I grew up in Western Nebraska around all white people. And I didn't know or understand this struggle at all. And I'm not sure why, except for that if things were happening, they were not shared in classes. My parents never talked about it. Hmm. Information didn't flow the way it flows now, but enough excuses. I was very into soul music, you know, by the time I was probably 9 or 10, because I had older siblings, older sisters in particular. And Anita's mentioned us picking a song that was emblematic of that time period. And the one I chose was What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. And, you know, again, I sang it, I danced to it, and I never heard it. I never really heard it. You know, it says, it starts out, "Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there are far too many of you dying." And if I had been asked at that time, I would have thought it was about the Vietnam War. But it goes on to say, you know, picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. And this is what we're talking here about here, you know, the life of Black people since forever. And so when I look at this, I'm humbled. It's just heartbreaking. And I wished I could have known more at the time. But I think the key is for people like me right now to just really hear these words now. Hear these words now. Really, really, really listen to the experiences of Black people. They are not making this up. They're not making up this discriminatory environment, this violent environment that they all have had to deal with. So that's my song. I think I'll rest there for a minute. Does that answer your question there, Anita?
Yeah, that's fine. So one of the reasons why I wanted to kind of take this approach is because music is such a powerful messenger, mm-hmm. if you will. And in that time period, when I go back and I think, and again, because I tie it to these assassinations, right? Because in my household, with my mother being an activist, I was able to see and feel the impact of these assassinations through her. Because like I said, on some of them in the 60s, I was just a little girl myself. Right. But when I look at my identity now, I can honestly say that so much of that came through me observing my mother. Like I can remember us looking on and seeing the funeral processions and that iconic picture of Dr. King's wife and his family at the funeral. Like we had those pictures in my home and just trying to be a little kid and watching what's happening to my mom, and I'm looking at these things that are happening on television, and I'm trying to digest it all and just trying to make a sense of what does all of this mean for me as a little Black kid that's trying to figure things out, right? And so you all know the story of 1971 when with the Steel Valley merger, and we were standing outside of our school. The school had been evacuated because of a bomb threat. And ironically, we've heard in the last couple of days bomb threats at HBCUs. So that incident happened to me in 1971. And here it is, 2022. And people are still doing that, like phoning in bomb threats and things like that to a school. And in 71, I was 14 years old. You're calling into a bomb threat with where kids are. And I'm just, you know, I struggle to wrap my mind around the rationale that goes into that. And what is it that drives a person to take that type of action, right? But then on the other hand, my identity was being shaped, not because that incident could have made me be fearful or what have you, but it didn't, because I was also surrounded by all this other stuff that was going on that was feeding me in terms of my Black identity. You know, so like I said, Sam Cooke, change is going to come. everybody that I can think of alive in that time period recognizes the value of that song. So in that time period, these songs were not written just for the sake of writing a song. They were driven by what was happening in the streets, in homes, in communities. It was literally driven by what was going on. As you said, Marvin Gaye, what's going on?
Right.
Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. I grew up on that. And those types of things are what make me be able to stand up today in 2022 and proclaim how proud I am of who I am, irrespective of anybody else's opinion or anything of me. I carry all of that within myself, and it feeds me in terms of how I see myself.
I just wanted to interject, Anita. I know a lot of my friends wouldn't know HBCUs, so historically Black colleges and universities. That was a term I learned not too long ago too. But these bomb threats in these colleges in the last couple of days brings up something old in me, that fear that there's that much hate, really, or fear in this country still, that we would play this game. It's just unimaginable, because people suffer so much. Yeah. One of the things I was reading today, I was going through Martin Luther King's, letter from a Birmingham jail, and he talks about waiting. And I keep seeing this word wait show up in different places, like just wait until the next person comes into office, or just wait until. No, no more waiting, no more waiting. We got to get this right in our lifetime. We just got to get this right. So thanks for letting me interject that.
Sure. So I want to actually, you mentioned Dr. King. I want to read a quote that I found. And what I find that's interesting in this country, like we just celebrated the Dr. King holiday and everything. But I would say that the average person doesn't really understand to a great extent what Martin Luther King really stood for. Like most people, when they hear MLK, I have a dream today. But the man was so prolific. And if you go back and listen to like some of the things, for example, I have a quote that I want to read that came from him when he did the commencement address at Morehouse College in 1959. And the title of the speech is Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution. Now, even when you just hear that title, I can pull that out of 1959 and plop it right into 2022. Because I feel like that's where we are. Things are on the brink of really, really changing. And there's so much resistance and censorship, and you can't talk about this and you can't talk about that. But we won't get there if we don't talk about it. I want to read this quote, and I want you to pretend like this quote is being said today in 2022, right? There can be no gainsaying of the fact that we are experiencing today one of the greatest revolutions that the world has ever known. Indeed, there have been other revolutions, but they have been local and isolated. The distinctive feature of the present revolution is that it is worldwide. It is shaking the foundations of the East and the West. It has engulfed every continent of the world. You can hear its deep rumblings from the lowest village street to the highest intellectual ivory tower. Every segment of society is being swept into its mainstream. The great challenge facing every member of this graduating class is to remain awake, alert, and creative through this great revolution.
Creative.
Is that incredible? Yeah. Right. 1959. Right.
So yeah. When I read those words, I think of, mm-hmm. I think I've talked with you about in the movie Malcolm X, at the end of the movie where they have these children from all over the world and they're standing up and they're saying, I am Malcolm X. I am Malcolm X. I am Malcolm X. Then when Trayvon Martin was murdered, you had people standing up all over the world saying, I am Trayvon Martin. I am Trayvon Martin. Young girls, older, you know, older kids all over the world. And then you go from Trayvon Martin to the Black Lives Matter movement, where you saw people protesting all over the world. So just think about that.
I just had a thought about what my other white colleagues and family, excuse me, might be thinking about the words revolution, Malcolm X. There were so many, in my memory, negative associations, mm-hmm. even to those words. But if as white people, we can put ourselves in the situation that Black people have been in, where the laws do not apply equally, there's really not much to protect us, we would revolt.
Right.
We would revolt.
Isn't that what we already did? Isn't that what the country did? The American Revolution.
That's right. We started this country that way, revolting.
We started this country. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, this country was started on revolution.
Right. But what I was just trying to stress is that for this particular movement, mm-hmm. I feel like there's a distancing between what white people felt and experienced and what Black people felt and experienced. That's the message I got in that point in my life.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Right, because when you look at the American Revolution, people associate nobility with that. Oh, we took a stand and we fought for our freedom and blah, 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 and all of that. But then when they started to draft the documents, the Constitution and all of that, they left people out. They left an entire group of people out. Liberty doesn't apply to you. Freedom doesn't apply to you. That doesn't apply to you. All men are equal. That doesn't apply to you. Justice doesn't apply to you. So on the one hand, you, and this is part of the hypocrisy that we've talked about. On the one hand, you have this conversation about freedom and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. We don't want to be under this person's control or this country's control. But then you took that very same control and you built this country on that very same control and wrote a constitution that said certain things, but in your mind, those certain things didn't apply to everybody. It only applied to white folks.
Just, I mean, it's ironic, right? It's kind of that the people who came to this country wanted to seek freedom.
To me, it's hypocrisy. It's right? Not even irony. It's great hypocrisy.
Well, it is hypocrisy. There's a quote that I want to say to you that I found by Julian Bond. He said, "The humanity of all Americans is diminished when any group is denied rights granted to others."
Absolutely.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
That's it.
So
when this country was formed, that's exactly what they did.
So having said all of that, the word revolution should not be a surprise, because when you really look at the word revolution, all it really means is change. And we are in a place right now where things must change.
No more waiting.
That's the definition of a revolution. We need change. We need change.
It has to happen within each of us, right? And around with all of us.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Mavis, are you feeling what I'm saying?
From definitely. Definitely. Anita, more today in our conversations than ever before, really. I just want to encourage everybody that's listening that it just takes a while for this understanding to sink in when it's not a part of your experience. Mm-hmm. And I always want to say I'm sorry, which is very Midwestern, but it is deeply, deeply troubling. And the thing is, we can do something about it.
Right.
We can do something about it today. Make the laws apply to every citizen equally. Period. I mean, that would be a start, you know?
More importantly, it's the way that we can allow ourselves to grow and transform those distorted beliefs that, whether we were conscious of them or not, into what is true, right? And the truth is that we all were created equal, right? Mm-hmm. That really was a true statement, but it was never delivered. It was never lived out.
Mm-hmm. Right, because when those words were written, they were not written with us in mind. Just like maybe when you read the
diary from your grandfather,
it wasn't a black people. It wasn't about our voice being heard. It was about this system that was in operation. And if there's emancipation, or if we lose this source that we have, it's going to impact us economically and all of that. So it wasn't really about your voice.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
in
about
fact, he that. Said that.
Yes.
He said that expressly. The black people have nothing to say about it.
Exactly.
Meaning they don't get to say anything about it.
Right. Even though
they weren't asked, what kind of country should we have?
Right. And that's my point. Even though mm-hmm. everything about that war was about our lives.
Right.
But because we weren't considered to be on the same plane or the same standard, it was like we're just arguing over horses and cows and things like that. You see? Mm-hmm. Because our voices weren't in the conversation.
They weren't even invited. They weren't asked. They weren't, right? Yeah.
Your humanity was not considered.
Exactly.
You know, I know we're going to go to break shortly. I just have to throw in something that stuck with me this week. I was in a kind of a class about racism within a church, and one of the ladies in the room was a kidney pathologist. And we were talking about matters of race, and she said, once you open up that body, you would not know if it's a white person or a black. I mean, that sounds obvious, but I just keep looking at that. I keep thinking of that heart beating, the bruises that can happen, the violations that can happen to that very same human being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It really struck me.
It is time for us to take a break, and we will be back shortly, and we will continue the conversation.
Melissa Johnson is a certified life coach, author, speaker, and creator of WOW Ministries, Worship Over Worry, designed to give you the tools needed to live a life of purpose. You have a choice daily to worry about your life and give up the fight, or decide to worship God through your pain and triumph victoriously. Melissa Johnson offers a variety of books, curriculums, and programs to guide you through a self-discovery journey.
Book your consultation with Melissa Johnson today at wowministriesllc.com.
Do you question what an authentic life really looks like? Tune in to The Alley Effect with Allison Blythe, authentically living life your way. Every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where Allison Blythe brings you tools, resources, and actionable steps toward your very best life. Take responsibility for your own happiness. For more about Allison, visit Allison, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, Blythe, B-L-Y-T-H-E.com.
It takes courage to step into your calling and go for your dreams. Sabotage monsters can get in your way, preventing you from reaching your potential. You can choose to struggle alone, or you can choose community and support, someone to walk beside you, meeting you where you are. If you are ready to make real and lasting change, Coach Christine Clark is here for you. Find out more about one-on-one coaching and group programs with Coach Christine at sunglowtransformation.com.
Your own innate brilliance already lives inside of you. Come discover it so you can shine brightly in this world. Join me, your host, Adrienne Cobb, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, during My Wild Magic on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get answers to who you are and where you belong. To learn more about me and the show, visit MyWildMagic.com. Again, that's MyWildMagic.com.
Tune in to the Sacred Attunement Show with Asher Countryman, unlocking the power of mind, body, soul abundance. Tune in every first and third Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Asher as she guides you to sacred attunement. Align your mindset and your actions to master your life's purpose. Discover more at sacredattunement.com.
So welcome back to Inflection Point Podcast on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm Anita Russell and my two dear friends, Gail and Mavis. We've been having a conversation about movements in the 60s, and we're talking about music, and we're talking about different things that people were saying, song lyrics and things like that. So I think, Mavis, one of you was finishing up something when we took our break. So I think it was Mavis, actually.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with another quote from Martin Luther King from that letter that he wrote in a Birmingham jail. And if I could ever write something so gorgeous and so specific and so peaceful and so loving and so clear and heavy hitting, I mean, it's just extraordinary. But not long ago, this was one of the statements that stood out to me. Martin Luther King says, "I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that Negroes' great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to positive peace, which is the presence of justice." And then it goes on a little bit and ends this paragraph with, and this is just stings, "Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection." And I have to own the white moderation for most of my life, because I didn't know. And I keep hearing that expression in the law is like, you know, not knowing the law is no defense of it. I don't want it to come off as a defense. I want it to communicate my desire to get this now. I want to understand what I'm not doing to help effectuate this change that's coming. What am I doing to stand in the way, to turn my head, all kinds of different things. So that quote, I will read and reread. Yeah, that was really important to me. I think there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us who think we're good people, right? That's how we describe ourselves. Nice, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can call yourself a good person. If you're walking down a street and you see someone being assaulted, you see someone being brutalized, and you cross the street because you don't want to be involved, you're still, you can still consider yourself to be a good person because you were not the one who was doing the victimizing. You were not the one who was hurting this individual. You are not the one, so on and so on and so on. But the fact that you are the one who turned a blind eye to some injustice that is right in front of your face makes you just as bad as someone who, you know,
hits it themselves
much more blatantly,
yeah,
you know, is a racist. Because I think with the whole idea of white people talking about racism, I think part of it, or part of the misunderstanding perhaps, is this lack of knowing that racism doesn't just mean calling people names or just doing these typical things that are associated with racism. Because the bottom line is, if you don't get the systemic aspect, if you don't get the institutional aspect, if you don't get that these things are permeated within the very air that we breathe, if you don't get that, then you're totally not even on the same page with somebody like me, as an example.
And you're unknowingly complicit.
Right.
Yeah. What did you say, Anita?
No, or I was saying, or individuals like the two of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who in the conversation, you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes I think it's hard for us to not completely recognize racism when we see it. That in and of itself is a whole learning process. I've probably overlooked it many times and just didn't know what was happening. You know, we were talking about the O.J. Simpson trial, and I experienced it so differently. And oh my goodness, yeah, there's just the issue of race. It's like you said to me one day, Anita, it is everything from sea to shining sea. It's in everything.
Right.
And it's not just the N-word. There's a whole lot more going on.
Exactly.
It's the belief of a person and looking at a Black person and believing that they are less than, believing that they are somehow not as entitled as whatever they think they are. It's in all that belief system that's held within, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Either that person has never said anything bad to somebody else or negative or critical, but they've felt that. They've held that belief. That's racism.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So I was
going to acknowledge it.
Yeah. I was working earlier on a videotape that that we had with one of the ASALA events. I'm a member of this organization called ASALA, which stands for the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. And so our local branch, we did an event. And it was a woman that read, her name is Dr. Beatrice Vassar, and she read a poem. And in that poem, she is describing an incident where she was a little girl and her mother was assaulted and raped by a group of KKK members on the side of the road, right? So she was just kind of describing what that experience was like for her, right? And if you look at that person who has carried that, and she's like almost, I think she's like 89 or somewhere in that age group now, has carried all of that in their body. But then for people to deny that you carry that in your body or in your mind or in your psyche or in everything that defines who you are. And so for me, that's the crux of all of this, is that denial. But that denial is real. And whether or not white people as a whole recognize that that's real doesn't diminish who I am in that reality. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not a statement about you. It's a statement about the person holding that belief, right?
Exactly.
It does not alter and change the reality and the truth about who you are.
Exactly.
And it makes a statement about that person believing that.
Right.
And whether or not it's history, it's still part of you.
Wait, say again?
Whether or not it's the past, it is still part of you. It's part of the woman who was assaulted, and it's carried forward.
It's in the present. Yeah,
it's in the present.
Right. It's very much in the present. Mm-hmm. Because she, if you think about who she was before that incident happened, and who she became after that incident happened. Because she describes from the day that that incident happened, and it was, I believe it was her and her sister who were in the car, and they threw like a blanket over them and told them, just don't say anything and don't look. And then a few days later, she's standing in front of her mom's casket in their house. Because you know how back in the day they would kind of have the casket in their
home. Right.
So a few days later, or whatever that time period was, she's standing in front of her mother's casket. I have no idea what
the trauma that she has.
So the point I'm making is, I am totally and completely aware of the fact that there are people out there who will hear that and not even be touched by it in their personhood, if you will. And so because there are people out there like that who wouldn't be able to identify with that kind of story, there are people out there who just cannot or will not identify with what this whole entire thing is all about. Right? Those people that choose to like not even get on the edge of the coin. They just stay in their territory.
Right.
Right. There are people out there who are like
that. Beliefs. That's right.
Right. And that is their belief system. And that's just what it is. And so the point I'm making is, just because there are people out there who hold that belief system doesn't mean that that belief system doesn't need to change.
Or that it's even true.
It still needs to change.
It has to change, right? Whether they want to jump in and change and transform themselves, that's a choice, but it has to change.
Exactly. So I'm going to read you, I wanted to shift a little bit and talk about the Black Panther Party, and because that's another organization that was kind of vilified and all of that. So I wanted to share some. Before I do that, I want to read this Nina Simone quote. I love Nina Simone. Right. And this is her Young, Gifted, and Black. And this is something that I have always loved, these words. Young, gifted, and Black. Oh, what a lovely, precious dream to be young, gifted, and Black. Open your heart to what I mean. In the whole world, you know, there's a million boys and girls who are young, gifted, and Black. And that's a fact. You are young, gifted, and Black. We must begin to tell our young, there's a world waiting for you. Yours is a quest that's just begun. I think about Cairo in those words, because that's how I see him. I don't know what his gifts are yet, but I know that little bro is gifted.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 feet tall, that little boy is gifted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want him to be able to live a life where he can discover those gifts and he can grow those gifts and he can produce fruit that other people can eat. Right?
Yeah, sister.
Yeah. Right? That's so powerful.
And it's not asking for much.
Oh.
Mm-mm. It's not asking for much, just to live like anybody else lives. Just
let him be who he is and all the possibilities that are be there, right?
Just leave us alone.
Leave
us alone.
Leave us alone.
Yeah. One of my favorites. You know,
in one of Frederick Douglass's, I think it was Frederick Douglass. And that's what he's saying. He's just saying, you know, people are asking this question, well, what are we going to do with all these Negroes when they're emancipated? Just leave them alone.
Let them be, let them live.
Let
them live.
And let them live. Exactly.
Truly really be free.
Exactly. So shifting a little bit to the Black Panther Party. And so when the two of you hear Black Panther, well, not you so much, Gail, because you went to Black Panther meetings and stuff like that. So Mavis, I know we've talked about this a little bit. When you hear Black Panther, like before we started all of this and you hear Black Panther, there's certain images that came into your mind. So talk to me about what some of those images were.
They were pretty negative.
Mm-hmm.
Frightening. They involved guns. They involved men marching together, trying to organize themselves. I'm not sure that I really understood much of what that was about at the time, but I think the vibe in my house was, oh no. And so, that's what I picked up on. So, you know, a couple of years ago, I watched a movie about them and I thought, I didn't know they did these good things.
Exactly.
You know, that was never a part of it. That was never a part of what I heard. And, you know, I keep wanting to understand, what were we so afraid of? What are we afraid of?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Because underneath all that hate, all that anger is fear. It's fear.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, and Angela Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, Angela Davis even her profile was a little frightening to me. She was such a distinctive looking person.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow.
That was like, yes. Yeah. What it was like for somebody like me. I mean, I like idolized Angela Davis when I was growing up.
You know, and why would I have been afraid of that? Image. Why would I have been afraid of her voice? If I'm not hearing Marvin Gaye's words, I'm sure not hearing what Angela Davis was actually saying or had the frame of reference for what she was doing and saying.
So I want to share this with you. There's a woman by the name of Alondra Nelson, and she wrote this book. She's a dynamic sister, right? So she wrote this book called Body and Soul: The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination. So that was one of the things that they really, really stressed. And it's kind of related to a lot of things that happen when you think about the origins of this idea that Black folks don't trust the medical community, because you think about the Tuskegee 626, the syphilis experiments. You think about what they did with Henrietta Lacks. You think about this whole idea that people think that our skin is thicker, and all of these different things. And I forgot the name of the woman, but she wrote that book called Medical Apartheid. And so you have all of this, and then you have the Panthers. And the Panthers took on this whole idea of health activism. Right. They had free medical clinics.
Right.
And this was about race and health in that time period.
Health and wellness. I mean, they were really interested in the wellness of the families, of kids.
Not exactly violence.
No.
So the point being,
yeah,
it was really about, we need to maintain this system at all costs. Mm-hmm. And so we vilify people. We turn them into menaces. Bugs. You know, we label them in these very negative kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And then people buy into that.
No.
People buy into that. Forget about the fact that they were feeding those children. But you know what? That's socialism anyway. We don't do socialism in the United States.
But Medicare is a whole socialist program. It's based on the principle of
Social Security or anything.
The point, the point being, it was the Panthers. It was this militant black that was presenting.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Number one, we're going to defend our communities.
Yeah.
Number two, we're going to build up our communities with health and wellness and all of that. Then we get to Fred Hampton.
Well, you're right.
And they literally walked in and assassinated him.
His bed.
So, I
wonder. Wasn't he still in his bed?
He was asleep.
He was asleep.
Right. He was asleep.
But I think, if I'm not mistaken, that I think he may have been drugged. I don't know all the details about that aspect of it. But apparently, like when they came in, he didn't like wake up. You know what I mean? So I believe that that is part of what had happened. Who drugged him? I don't know like all the details.
I got to look at that again.
That I have to go back and check. But listen to this thing that that Gil Scott-Heron wrote. And again, how these words connect to the movement and what's happening. So he wrote this thing called No Knock, right? So here's what it says. Enter. Shocking, shooting, cussing, killing, crying, lying, and being white. No knock. No knock on my brother Fred Hampton. Bullet holes all over the place for my protection. Who's going to protect me from you? So when I saw that, not only does it tie into what was done to Fred Hampton, but it also brings to mind what happened with Breonna Taylor.
Breonna Taylor.
Right, exactly the same thing. Yes.
You see?
We can't wait anymore. Nothing's happening to change this. Not enough.
No.
At the very least. Yeah.
And I think it's important that people begin to make all of those connections.
Yes.
Just to make all of those connections. No knock warrants. Fred Hampton, Breonna Taylor.
That is the opposite of what courage is, right? It is cowardly. It's easy. It's right to shoot a kid in the back or to open up the doors in somebody's house when they're sleeping and kill them. I mean,
what is
that, right?
But it's all in the name of preserving this system.
That's not democracy.
No, it's not. Of course it's not democracy. But it's not democracy at all.
What are we preserving, right?
Right.
Really
so
preserving?
People like us are actually fighting for like real democracy.
Yes.
But I'm at the same time, that force that's against that is to maintain the old guard, maintain the old system, maintain the old rules, maintain the old regulations and the institutions. It's to maintain all of that, which is what makes our work so incredibly important that we continue to push forward.
Oh, I know.
We
all have to. This can change. People can change their belief systems within when they can access what is true, but they have to access what is true.
Right.
Yeah. I think I mentioned in one of our podcasts, you know, I quoted John Lennon, "Love is all you need." This is what MLK said. This is what Marvin Gaye is saying in his songs. You know, we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. It's just that simple. Empathy, compassion, understanding, love. I'm just trying to think of a reason to hate each other. You know, how does that serve anybody?
Why do you hate somebody you don't even know, right?
Not right.
That you've never even met, right? That's right. All fear.
It's fear. It's
self-serving.
It's self-serving.
Right.
Yeah. We have to maintain, you know,
that's superiority, right? It's not being.
and let's censor stuff. Let's just fix it so that they can't read this kind of book and they can't read that kind of book. You know what that sounds like, right? 1984.
Here we go. Yeah.
You know that after the election of Donald Trump, that the sales for 1984 literally soared through the roof.
I didn't hear that. Wow.
Yeah.
And I think it was triggered by Kellyanne Conway. That was her name, right?
Yeah.
She made that statement, alternative facts. That's straight Orwellian, straight out of 1984.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But that's kind of interesting that everybody flocked out. Well, not everybody, but so many people flocked
out. We can feel it. We can feel it, right? Everybody can feel.
Right, right.
This. The force of this unequal, non-democratic society. And it's just terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we literally have about 2 minutes left. So I want to make sure that I call out, this is Inflection Point Podcast. We broadcast the first and third Wednesday of the month on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm your host, Anita Russell, and I am the founder and CEO of The Place to Soar. Mavis Gale.
I'm Mavis Bauman again, president of Seed a Better Life. And next time, I hope we have just a little more time at the end. I'm going to tell you a story about one of my kids in Rwanda and how doing something small for these kids means so much. Seedabetterlife.org.
And I'm Gail Hunter, and I am president of the board of OMA. It's omapittsburgh.org, and we provide a lot of different programs for kids and adolescents and adults, and a lot are trauma-based and informed. And if you're interested, please feel free to check it out. Thanks.
Excellent, excellent. So we will see you next time on Transformation Talk Radio, Inflection Point Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth, reconciliation, and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.